Hi everyone, welcome to the very first episode of the Sunlight Media Podcast. I'm your host, Angelo Frasina, founder and CEO of Sunlight Media. Today's guest is Tony Selznick, co-founder of MSA, the global leader in dance representation.
Hey, how you doing?
I'm good, how are you?
Good. You hear me okay?
Again, can you hear me okay?
Yes, I hear you fine.
Great.
Thanks for joining us. The very first episode of the Sunlight Media Podcast. Great to have you on board.
How long are we talking?
Yeah. I'm sorry?
How long is this podcast, just so I know what we're how long we're talking for?
We can talk as long as you like. I mean, I'd like to do at least 30, 40 minutes. So if that works for you, that would be great.
30, 40
the longer
minutes.
The better. Awesome.
Yeah.
Perfect. So how's it all going at MSA? I know a lot of businesses now are finding it very challenging, and I'm sure it's not any different for you guys. So, you know, tell me how it's, how COVID's kind of impacted you guys and how you've gone about, you know, making changes to adapt.
Yeah, Angelo, that's a really big question. I will tell you this, that the nature of our business, the nature of my business is talent representation. So all the jobs dried up when COVID hit. I don't think there's maybe, you know, seriously 98% of the business dried up. Much of what I do, you know, my company, McDonald Selznick Associates, we're a talent agency, but we specialize in dancers, choreographers, directors, producers, and designers of live like spectacle. And producers of like of television variety type shows like America's Got Talent and that kind of stuff. And a lot of our dancers work by doing touring. So the touring business stopped. A lot of our directors do stage shows. That stopped. A lot of our producers, you know, do these shows. So all the live work stopped, like everything.
Right.
So our, you know, what's been interesting is that as devastating as all that was, it's also, and I'm sure everybody's experiencing this on some level, there's a really cool reset happening spiritually and creatively with people over this past couple months that I've witnessed. And I'm a very positive person, so I'm just looking forward to not things going back to normal, because I don't think that that's the right way to think about it, but I am looking forward to finding where the business is. And I do think the business is changing and shifting for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of people that I've spoken to have been saying there's, you know, changes to the way they operate the business, the type of business that they conduct, and the way they conduct that business. So people and businesses and companies have kind of had to think out of the box as to, you know, how they can keep their business going and how they move forward and keep things running. So, I mean, how has that impacted you, like, on a day-to-day level? You're obviously not going into an office and meeting with a big team. So give us kind of an overview of how, you know, day-to-day operations have changed since COVID for you guys.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, we do everything on Zoom. We do weekly meetings. We have an office in New York as well, and that was hit a lot harder. So they, you know, but we are still all connecting. And, you know, the word that I find myself using a lot is pivoting. You know, I feel like this is a real time when people have to like pivot and see what parts of their careers aren't going to work, you know, focus on the parts that are. And I'll give you a really good example that in my field, in the dance industry, teaching has become extremely popular. And, you know, financial, it's a great job for a lot of choreographers, because they are so well known now because of social media, they can teach classes and they travel the world teaching. And when all of this happened, people right away were doing really cool things like free classes on Instagram Live and just wanting to connect with people because they knew that people were scared and frightened and wanting to kind of just like share with community. So that started happening. But then all the businesses that do dance conventions and stuff started to push forward their technology that does Zoom classes and master classes and coaching and tutorials and rentals and stuff. And that business is booming. And that to me is like, that's one area that's very exciting to me, that people were able to, in a very short period of time, pivot and create an entire new business for themselves. That even when we are allowed to be in a room with a few hundred people again, I think this idea of training individually online is still going to happen, because people can't travel as much. You can't go from Europe to the United States so easily to take a class. Now that the classes are being offered online, I think it's really great. So I think there's opportunities like that across the board.
Absolutely. Yeah, my wife's a ballet teacher as well, and she's had to transition into the online classes as well. You know, it's been a little challenging with the technology and making sure that all the students have, you know, the right audio and video gear to see and hear everything. But, you know, once they got that ironed out, it looks like it's a model that can definitely work.
Yeah, you know, I think everybody right now has to sort of look around and sort of see where it's coming from. That's interesting. I didn't know your wife does that. That's so cool.
Yes. She's been dancing ballet since she was a child, and she did some freelance work, and now she's a teacher for a number of schools and organizations in downtown LA and Koreatown. So, wow. Thankfully, she's been able to keep her job for the most part. I mean, it did go quiet for a number of weeks, but the schools figured out how they can keep everyone working and keep the students learning. So. Happy for her that she's been able to do that. So moving forward, I mean, how would that work for the MSA agency? Would you go into being an agent for teachers and online classes as well, or you kind of leave that up to the individual?
No, we will. You know, I'm luckily that part of it, I was ahead of the curve. We're the first agency. First of all, Julie, my partner, was the first person to represent dancers, so we're actually the first dance agency, but we're also the first agency to represent teachers. So we have a whole roster of teachers, and we were sending them all over the world. And when all of this happened, they started, that's what I'm saying, my clients are doing pop-up classes online, and now they're all, joining all these different companies that are doing it. And funny, what happened is that, I do this summer program every summer. It's called the Camp. And basically, it's me as MSA wanting to sort of do a proof of concept if, as an agency, we can hold a convention, a dance convention, rather than be just someone that books teachers, can we actually host it ourselves? So I put together the Camp, and it's been extremely powerful experience for these kids, because it's a very close-up, intimate experience with kids studying with some of the best choreographers in the industry, ones that could actually change their lives by giving them careers, So it's been a really fun program. And this year, we're doing it for our fifth time. And this year, because of COVID, we just decided a week ago we're going to do it online. And it's a scary thing because so much of it is the in-person experience, yet I also really want this opportunity to see if as an agency, we have something to say in the online teaching world. So that's what we're doing. In the Camp, we decided we can only take 50 kids because it's Zoom and we can see 25 at a time on Zoom, because it is an interactive experience. They are going to be meeting the teachers and stuff. But what's very cool, we sold out already, and we're a month and a half away from it. So we're trying to figure out if we're going to really keep it limited, which we have to, because we said we would, and it's the Zoom thing is really important that you don't, keep on doing too many pages of it. But then we're thinking we'll add another one. So it's been, that's what I'm talking about. That part's been really exciting. I got my teaching agents at my office activated in this. Everyone's excited. We're all working together, seeing if we can create a source of incomes. What I love about this for me is that, I'm actually creating really cool projects, but then I'm able to give the jobs to my clients, which is what my job is as an agent. So it's like a full circle for me. I love being able to do stuff like that.
That's great. That's really good to hear. Yeah, I was on your Facebook page, and I'm just looking at the Camp flyer that you've got going on there. So that's really great. It's amazing you can continue doing these types of classes in a remote environment, and hopefully one day we can get the big classes back together again, but at least it keeps businesses running and people learning and interacting. Yeah, that's really cool. Good to hear. So maybe we can kind of go back a little bit and just talk about your early days as a dancer, how you got involved in that, and kind of how it transitioned into the MSA agency.
So it's such a funny story. When I was 14 years old, my brother took me to a dance class in Venice, California. And I actually started studying dance because I was worried about going to bar mitzvahs and parties and stuff. And I just thought, I got to learn how to dance. So that was what made me start going. And the studio that I went to was owned by Julie, my partner. And I took class there for years. We were like a family. It was called Room to Move. And as the years went on, she was a dancer as well, and she injured herself, so she started an agency. And She was my first agent, and years of working as an agent, and I was a client of hers. After years, I transitioned into, I started being her assistant, and then we were partners, and we left that company and started our own, which is MSA, 20 years ago. So my relationship with Julie actually goes way, way back. And I'm one of those lucky ones, Angelo, because I was able to, I feel so grateful that my path was sort of carved out. Like it was for me. I feel really blessed that, you know, my brother taking me to dance class, my teacher, Russell Clark, who was my mentor, hiring me for all those years and teaching me how to become a teacher, and Julie being in my life, and then her and I starting a company together. I mean, it's been kind of magical when you look at it that way, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So, I mean, was it a decision early on in life that you were going to be a dancer and you're going to be, you know, do it as a career, or that kind of just transition naturally that way? I mean, when did you decide it's like, yep, this is it, I'm going to be a dancer and this is my path?
That's a really good question. You know, when I was in high school, I was dancing still, and I went to an artistic, it was called Windward High School in Santa Monica, and it was like an alternative school at the time. And they really, you know, encouraged people to be artistic and expressive and everything. So they were really supportive of my dancing. And I got a job in a movie called Xanadu. And that was Russell Clark choreographed it with Kenny Ortega was the main choreographer. And he's a very famous director still. And so Kenny gave me my first job. And so I came home and I was like, hey, Mom, I'm going to finish high school, but I'm going to do this movie too. And by, you know, the paychecks I was getting from Xanadu was so exciting. And then I just started working. It was one of those things that just happened. I was in music videos when MTV was starting, and it just happened on its own. And then years later, when I started working as an agent, the transition from being a performer into wanting to be behind the camera, that was a whole nother story. That was a gradual transition too, but you know, it all kind of brought me here.
That's amazing. And then you're originally from LA. You're born and raised here in Los Angeles.
Born and raised in Santa Monica. Wow. I have two kids, and they were born and raised in the same place, Santa Monica.
That's great. You know, it's very rare that you actually meet people in Los Angeles that are, you know, part of the entertainment industry that are actually from here. You know, from my experience, it's always, you know, people coming in from out of state or overseas like myself to be involved in the entertainment industry. But it's great that you're from here and you've taken advantage of that and been successful. So it's awesome.
Thank you. Yeah. It's been a
and so
journey.
And so your partner Julie as well, was she a professional dancer at some point in her career, or did she just kind of go straight into running the school and the agency? What's kind of her background?
You know, she wasn't necessarily professional, but she did I know that she was the assistant choreographer of, I think, the 1984 Olympics. You know, so she was on the fringe, but again, she was one of the first people that sort of like brought together the dance industry. So before that, it was very kind of like catch-as-catch-can jobs, but it really formalized and turned into a real career when all the agencies popped up and it became, you know, like a real source of income and living, and a lot of people training to become professional dancers and everything, you know.
I mean, so before the agencies, I mean, if you're a dancer looking for a gig, what would you do? How would you go about getting work?
That was me before Julie was an agent. We would find jobs in magazines called Backstage and stuff like that. It was all word of mouth, and choreographers would hire the same group of people for job to job, and they, you know, like that's, which they, a lot of them still do that actually, because there's a comfortability when you know dancers are going to show up and they're going to be in good spirits and they're well trained and they're dependable and all that, you know. But that was what it was like. And then the agency started, and it was, Julie had the perfect timing because it was right when MTV started. So there was, you know, huge desire for casting dancers for many, many videos every single day, you know?
Yeah, that's very good timing, because that's when music videos became real popular. So I'd imagine there was a huge spike for, you know, in demand for dancers. So excellent timing.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So I guess then in the early days, you're just simply focusing on being an agency for dancers and choreographers, but you know, now I know you manage producers, directors, teachers, influencers, a whole bunch of different people. So what was the decision behind that and representing, you know, more than just dancers and choreographers?
Yeah, it's kind of the decision why Julie and I started our own company, because I didn't want to be in any way told like what to do or who to work with. So we're very lucky that, you know, what our clients is, as the industry grew, we started booking our choreographers as creative directors, as performances, for performances. The first major one was that the producer of the Grammys, Ken Ehrlich, called my partner Julie looking for somebody that, a choreographer, to help Ricky Martin stage his first performance on television, on American television, as a pop artist. Mm. And Jamie got the job, and Jamie became Ricky's creative director. And then from there, he became Madonna's creative director, and he was Prince's creative director before that. And he started a real trend of choreographers becoming creative directors. And we were right there at the forefront with that. So, you know, my particular, Jamie's one of the clients I work closest with. So my job was now booking creative directors for like almost every single tour. We're talking about Madonna, Britney, Rihanna, Taylor Swift, J-Lo, like every single artist. They were using the same few directors. And for so many years, Jamie was that guy, and it was incredible. So that kind of grew there. The same thing happened like 10 years ago. A friend of mine worked for Simon Cowell, and he called me saying they're looking for a creative director / choreographer to do the X Factor. And I got my friend and client, Brian Burke, on that. And from there he did X Factor. He did America's Got Talent for like the past 10 years, and American Idol, and La Banda in Miami. Like, he's become one of the most sought after executive producers or creative producers in the industry. And he was an assistant choreographer on a Celine Dion show years ago. Like, these people grow into these amazing positions. And I'm so grateful that because I own the company, I can say, okay, we're representing TV producers now. You know what I mean?
Yeah, that's amazing.
Yeah,
that's awesome. So, I mean, if a producer does come up to you and they say, hey, we have this show and it's about dance and so forth, how do you then kind of figure out who's going to be, the best director or talent or choreographer for that particular show? Do you base it around the style of dance or the type of show? I mean, how do you go about, putting a team together for that type of production?
Yeah, it's funny. Agents get asked that a lot because clients ask that, like, how do you decide when you submit? But when you actually look at projects, they're usually pretty good clues. Like, a project where they're looking for Broadway choreographer, if it's on Broadway, they're not going to hire a commercial choreographer from California unless they're extraordinary circumstance and it's happened a few times because they're famous from So You Think You Can Dance or something. But, that's a very specific kind of choreographer is going to book that. If a choreographer, a lot of the pop shows that are out right now, the choreographers that do that are friends with the artist or friends, the choreographers. It's an interesting dynamic right now where most of the pop stars, their best friend is their choreographer. So their best friend's friends are the dancers. It's a really, inside thing like that, So a lot of times that's just representing the best. So we get called for these jobs because we really do have the best people. And then there are times when we get called and saying, like, just recently, there's a show on TV now called Legendary that's coming out on HBO Max. I think like last night they did a teaser and it comes out next week. And it's about the voguing ball scene in the underground dance world. And the producer for that called me months ago and said, hey, I'm looking for choreographer / creative producer for this job, kind of like what Nappy Tabs do. And Nappy Tabs are some of our biggest clients that do a lot of this stuff. And I sent a few people that I thought that were right for it, and we ended up booking somebody. And, so I do get opportunities like that where I can actually book somebody on something.
Right. I guess that makes your job a little bit more fun when you can start getting creative and figuring out who the best people are going to be for the job. But I guess it sounds like most of the time it's all about, referral, word of mouth, who people that they've worked with in the past and they're comfortable with.
It does. And then there's those awesome opportunities, like when we were able to get Jamie on with Ricky Martin or Brian Burke on with X Factor, where all of a sudden you're kind of like, it's like that one little job, but it changes everything because you just introduce them to a relationship that's going to go for the next 15 years. Like, that's the best part of what I do is, like, I guess that's really what agents do or in this business is hopefully one of the things that we do is make connections and hopefully make relationships. Cause it's all about the relationship. The best and biggest jobs that I'm working on are repeat jobs. People that know me and know my clients and come back,
Right. Yeah, absolutely. That's I think the most satisfying achievement for any business owner or individual is to have, long-term relationship with, you know, their clients and associates and colleagues and stuff like that. You know, it's a good relationship to have. That's awesome. That sounds really cool. So from what I hear, it seems like there are certain productions that are slowly trickling back. But I also hear that none of those productions are happening in Los Angeles. But how does that affect you guys? I mean, are you seeing an increase, trickle back in productions now?
Well, you know, yes. I'm just writing this down. Sorry about that. So it's interesting is, you know, every case is different. Like in New York, Broadway, although they're not necessarily coming back soon, they've been very respectful of the cast members by the unions giving them, you know, they've been able to make like some money in the back in the beginning. And, you know, they're working on their plan coming back. I know that the industry here, one area that we were able to keep going, doesn't like sustain the whole entire office, but it's another area that we're really looking at is in the influencer branding thing. Because we do, in the dance world, there are influencers, and I've toyed with this many times. You and I have had this conversation before about influencers, and in some ways they're hard to agent, but you know, we do get opportunities a lot, and those are the opportunities that have been happening because of COVID. You know, people, the products, you know, people wanting our clients to do things because they can film at home. There's been a couple of TV shows. There was one, The Graduation, that special that just came out. I think it was on all the networks, and the Obamas were involved in it. And it was like a tribute to kids that couldn't graduate. And my daughter is graduating this year, and I know the producer of that. So I called him, and he actually cast Scarlett as one of the kids in it. So they had this number where Jonas Brothers sang a song, and they had like kids from all over the world doing like a dance to it. And my daughter was one of them, and it was really fun because that was actually on her birthday that it aired.
Oh, that's awesome. What a great birthday gift.
Yeah, so that's been happening. Like The Voice has been doing at-home things, and I think they're doing the same thing. There are a few companies that are like hiring dancers by Zoom and inserting them in a backdrop for the artists and stuff, and I love that. That probably is the most exciting thing for me, is watching how people are creatively finding ways to work even with all this happening, you know?
Yeah, absolutely. So they're actually allowing the dancers to record themselves and then send that footage off for production. You mean they're not actually sending out, you know, a camera guy or a small production crew to film them. They're actually allowing them to do it themselves. Is that what's happening?
No, I think what they're doing, I don't know for sure, but what it sounds like, because I watched The Voice and The Voice does it, it sounds like what they do is that they ship cameras to the contestants, and they have to, and they put them up themselves, and then but it's not on their own cameras, like they're being sent equipment or something like that.
I see.
The thing my daughter did, she filmed that on her phone, and they sent her props. So actually, I take that back. I think there's a combination of both, because the one that she did that was on a, you know, on a network show, that was her filming on her phone and sent it through Zoom.
Okay, that's interesting. That's really cool. So you've got a family of dancers as well. I mean, is your daughter considering a professional dance career as well?
No, but she might, you know, she's more like me in that she's kind of looking behind the scenes. I wouldn't be surprised if she ends up working somewhere around my industry. You know, we talk about that sometimes, you know.
Right.
And I have an older daughter. Yeah, I guess Violet's not in the dance world, but she's worked for my company before, and she's fantastic. I would love to involve her someday. Who knows? Maybe both my kids will be involved with my business someday.
Yeah, that's cool. Yeah, keep it in the family. That's always great.
Yeah.
And it's always good to, you know, to let them, you know, transition or do whatever they want them to do and not, you know, force them to become a dancer or entertainer. It's obviously got to be a passion of theirs to be involved in anything creative, really, especially such a competitive industry as, you know, entertainment, dance, music, that type of stuff. But if they can get in early, at an early age, and they enjoy it, then, you know, the future is wide open.
Yeah.
That's really cool. So I just want to kind of get your opinion on, you know, the COVID situation in general, and how you think, in particular, LA County and California State has handled it. Do you think the closure, or the way they handled the business closure, was correct? You think it should have been handled differently? You know, what's your opinion on, you know, on the entire process?
I mean, this is so funny. These are like rabbit holes that you can go down in conversations. I will say, I will say this. I'm so disgusted in our country that this has become a political conversation, because what I find is that, you know, my friends that are more conservative, believe that people dying is not really significant compared to how many people die from the flu, and it's way overkill, and we're killing the economy, and we need to loosen it up, and it's, this is all fake. And then I have, you know, my Democrat friends, you know, that are, you know, no, this is real. By the way, I have clients that have had COVID and almost died. So I know the reality of all this stuff, you know? So
right.
That's what's just so horrible about all this, is that you don't even know who to believe anymore, because it's, information has been, you're polarized into thinking, okay, if you believe, you know, if you're this, this is how you're supposed to believe. If you believe this, how you're supposed to believe. I do know this, is that I have no interest in really mingling with tons of people right now, but I do believe in, like, right. I've been social distancing with my family. So, you know, and I've gone to work a few times, and our accountant is there, but in the beginning he wore a mask and we stayed in different rooms, and we still stay at least 6 feet apart, and I'm being very careful, but I don't believe that you should not be around people. Like, I think you can be with small groups as long as everybody's careful. But yeah, I don't think that we should be rushing this at all. And I understand the urgency on a business level to open everything back up. But I mean, all you have to do is look at the World Health Organization, and they're saying, you know, just be, you know, that this is going to create the next wave. And I think that's stupid, you know? More than anything, it's not become about COVID. It's become about our politics in this country. It's horrible. It's horrible.
Yeah, that's a big shame. That's the biggest disappointment of it all, really, is the political aspect of it. You know, I definitely think that there needed to be a mandatory shutdown, you know, of all businesses, and the social distancing and all of that is great. You know, it needed to happen. Keeping it shut down for this long, I'm not sure about. You know, it's obviously affected, you know, a lot of businesses, a lot of individuals, put a lot of financial stress and burden on so many people. So, you know, I think that there needed to be some type of system in place where they would allow certain businesses to continue working more. I know that they did allow it for the, you know, food and restaurants and to go and stuff like that. But there's so many other businesses that are suffering and have suffered for so long. To me, it felt like, you know, maybe they should have allowed some of them to open a little earlier and just do the curbside pickup, or, you know, brainstorm or come up with some ideas that are going to continue allowing businesses to generate income. Yes, you know, there's been obviously a massive death number with COVID, but my concern is, you know, how many deaths by suicide are we going to see in the coming weeks and months, and people being so depressed and out of money and out of work? I have heard that there's been an increase in that recently, but how much worse is it going to get?
Well, listen, you know? Again, this is like a whole nother rabbit hole. It's so funny, all these topics you bring up are so heated, because I feel so lucky, Angelo, that this is my experience with COVID, is being able to quarantine at home with my family in a house where I have outside and a view and a pool and all that, you know. But I just, my heart every single day goes out to the kids that don't want to be home, the abusive father, the marriages that aren't any good, the fact that these people, you know, right. The families that send their kids to school so they can eat, like, that's horrible. But again, I don't politicize it. I think that, look, this is all happening because there was this insane disease that we were not ready for and prepared for, and we have to do everything, you know, possible not to die, which is to, you know, isolate ourselves. And I do think that people, it is starting to open up back now. And I do hope that a lot of these companies were able to get those government loans, because unfortunately I think that they were taken up by some really huge corporations that it should have been meant for the businesses that you're talking about, you know?
Right. Right. Yeah. Unfortunately, it looks like some of the big companies have taken advantage of it and got in early and dried up a lot of the funds, and it's left the smaller businesses, you know, out in the limb. So it's definitely been an interesting time. And one disturbing thing that I did hear Elon Musk talk about on the Joe Rogan podcast recently is that the numbers could very likely be skewed because of the fact that I think the government has offered an $8,000 payout or incentive to hospitals that have a dying patient. Yeah. COVID.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, that's that's just awful. I mean, it's opened up a huge can of worms. And I can understand, you know, a hospital being in a situation where they're going broke. You know, they don't have enough patients to keep the hospital open because there's been restrictions on the types of patients that they can bring in. So they're in a situation where, oh, you know, we need to lay off, you know, 10, 20 doctors this month because we can't afford it. And then all of a sudden this stimulus package comes along where if you've had a patient that dies of COVID, you're eligible for $8,000. Mm-hmm. So, you know, so the hospital administrator at that point needs to think, okay, well, do I keep my doctors paid and just lie and tell them I've had three or four COVID patients this month when they actually weren't? Or to be honest, you know. So there's been some really disturbing facts and stats that have come out of this whole thing, and it's going to be interesting to find out in the future is, you know, what are the real numbers, you know?
Yeah, exactly.
What are these real numbers, and how many people actually died, and how many people lied and took advantage of a system that really wasn't structured or thought of in advance? You know, I think if everyone had a little more time, they probably could have come up with some more effective stimulus packages that wouldn't allow people to take advantage of them. You know.
Yes, I agree.
Yeah. So yeah, interesting to see what pans out. But hopefully, like you said, we're at the end of it and things are going to start getting back to normal and everyone can go about their own lives.
Well, you know what? I wouldn't use that terminology. I don't think things are going to go back to normal. And I don't think people are going to return. I personally think that we need to look at this as a very important cosmic, like, wake-up call to all of us. And it's interesting because for me personally, our company went through a huge turmoil right before COVID hit, where people that were working for me for 10 years decided to leave, and they did it in a really not such a healthy way, so it was disruptive to our company. And my partner Julie and I, it was really like everything after 20 years, it took us like everything we had to like muster up the strength to be inspired to rebuild it, and we rebuilt our company with an incredible team, like people that we really love and we believe in. And then COVID hit, and now on a daily basis, a weekly basis, we're dealing with keeping our employees, you know, how we handle this during this time, when can we go back? And, you know, and I'm really looking at it as like, this all happened these are the reasons why these things happen, and we will survive this, and we're going to come back, and we're going to come back better. So I'm looking forward to MSA being able to identify where the business is and being able to service that part of the industry, because I do think so much of this is us having to sort of like wake up and see, you know, like where we are all responsible for letting something like this happen. And because it's changing so radically, what lessons can we learn? I think it's so important that we do that, you know?
Oh, yeah, absolutely. A lot of people have definitely learned some hard lessons from this, and are certainly going to change the way we do things moving forward. So what actually happened with MSA when you had some issues there? Was it just people moving on and wanting to do their own thing, or
it was exactly that. And it was just, but there were ways that it just wasn't handled in a way that was all that great. But yes, and that happens in our business. That's not even a big deal because it's happened before and it happens again, like all of that. But it was just interesting timing for us that my partner and I like had to look each other in the eyes and go, yeah, we're still in it. Let's do it. And let's rebuild it and make it better. Yeah. And this happened. It was like, wow. And I could have been defeated. Like both my partner and I, my partner's 70, you know, I'm 57. She could have easily said, I'm out, Tony. Like I'm done. And I know she's all day long, but no, we have, I've known her since I was 14 and I'm inspired. Our clients are really inspiring and I'm inspired, really inspired to find new ways of doing business. And what is encouraging to me is that one of the projects I'm working on is a show that I'm developing, a television show, and it has nothing to do with my agency, although it is a dance show, so of course it has everything to do with me and my agency. But I'm lucky to have the time to be able to work on this, and my partners are all people that sell shows, and what I'm feeling from them is, although nobody's in production right now, there's a really big surge to find content and to come back stronger, because everybody has to come back stronger. So that's been really encouraging. It's not like the industry is looking at us saying, it's over, go home. Like everybody is saying, if you have ideas, bring them, because there's streaming platforms that are coming out. There's content, you know, Zoom is all these conference call things. There's that thing Twitch that's getting really popular. There's all these platforms that are gaining strength right now. So what I say to people is look at those, like let's move in that direction, you know?
Right, right. Yeah, it's a time to brainstorm and create some new ideas and avenues.
Let's use this horrible, horrible thing that happened to the world as a reset, and hopefully we can be inspired to learn something from it.
Yeah, absolutely. So how did the agency go about setting up a New York location? Because from what I understand, Julie was originally based here in Los Angeles, correct?
Yeah, that took years and years and years, and we found the right, it's all about finding the right people. We found the right people to run the company, it's really about that. We would have never been able to do this on our own, but the team that we have in New York, they are incredible. And yeah, like I said, it's not easy. We tried to open up one in Atlanta. It didn't go so well. We were trying again right before COVID, but it's, you know, of course everything's shut down right now, but you know, we struck it with New York. We found a really good group of people, and they're a blessing to work with.
So is Julie based in New York, or is she here in LA?
Julie's here.
Oh, Julie's here. Okay. So it's a team of people in New York. You actually don't have a business partner there. Is that what I understand?
No, it's MSA. It's Julie and I. It's our company, but it's in New York. And we have people there that run it there.
That run it there. Okay.
Really incredible people. Bree is the director there. She's actually a partner with us with MSA. And then we have Greg and we have Rebecca and Nicholas. We have four people that run, and it's amazing. Like, and this is what's so sad about New York is that we are doing really well, and this shut everything down, but we are cooking in New York, and we're going to do really well next year when New York comes back. So awesome. This is a minor setback, but we were doing better than we've ever done in the 20 years that we've been in business, actually.
That's awesome. That's really good to hear. Yep. Great news. Yeah. So I'm looking at your Facebook page here, and I see this Nick Talk post here. Can you tell me about it? Is that another production that you're working on? What is this one exactly?
You know, it's so funny. I don't use Facebook. I'm an Instagram person, so I don't know what you're looking at. What does it say?
Okay. Check out this fun new project, Nick Talk, that our very own Guy Groove worked on. Watch the contestants battle it out.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
Awesome choreography.
That's me just posting something on Facebook from our company. Is that mine or it must be on MSA's Facebook page?
Yeah, it's MSA. Uh-huh.
Yeah, so that what we did is our website, which you designed for us so beautifully, helped us with the redesign, which is fantastic. It, as you know, pulls things from Instagram. So what you're seeing there is an Instagram post. So yeah, one of our clients, Guy Groove, did a show for Nickelodeon that is like a dance show, which I'm really excited to see. So that's what you're looking at there.
Okay, so users just send in their dance video and judges kind of sit and judge and
I guess so. Provide feedback. I mean, I don't know the format of it, but that sounds great. It sounds like something I wish I thought of.
Cool.
Sounds great, though. Yeah. I'm really glad that.
Very good. And then the camp, I see you've got the camp that's running in July and you're promoting that. So that's really cool.
That's
and
right.
I guess this would be the first time you actually do it remotely, right?
Yeah. We already sold out. So hopefully we're going to be able to deliver what we're promising.
And this is nationwide, so anyone across the country can join in?
Anywhere across the world, actually. It's global.
Across the world, yeah.
Yeah.
Awesome. So how have you done it in the past? Have you had different camps in different cities, or have you always based it in L.A.?
No, we've just done it in L.A. It's been only 50 kids, and it's very small, but it's very powerful, and it's really fun, and the kids get to go through an experience like nothing else here in Hollywood for that week.
Very cool. Very cool. All right.
Yeah,
I was just kind of getting looking over your page here and see what you got going on. It looks like you're doing some work with The Voice, which is
that's
cool.
That's one of our clients. Angela, listen, I have to get off because I have to run into another meeting now. I hate to cut this session short. But what you're looking at on The Voice is, that's Jerry Slaughter. And he, again, was a dancer with Christina Aguilera. He became Christina Aguilera's choreographer. And now he's a producer on The Voice. And that's what you're looking at
Excellent.
There. Yeah, Jerry Slaughter and Paul Murphy, they are creative producers on The Voice. Again, which is just so incredible to watch this, is they went from dancer to choreographer to now producing television.
That's amazing. It's amazing, isn't it? How you can transition into
and by the way,
so many different things.
Yeah, and they're one of the few producers that I do represent that are doing this like at home thing because of The Voice. So I love the fact that I have clients that are making this in new environment work for them, you know?
Absolutely. Absolutely. That's good to hear. Well, I don't want to keep you too much longer, Tony. I know you're busy, and I really appreciate your time today. It's been a great conversation.
Thank you. Hopefully,
we can do it again later in the year or sometime soon, actually in person, and get into some more fun stuff and conversations and talk about what you're working on.
We should do post-COVID podcast and check in with each other after all of this stuff is over.
Absolutely. Sounds like a great plan. Let's definitely do that.
Sounds good.
All right, Tony, you have a great day. Enjoy the rest of your week, and I'm sure we'll be chatting again soon.
Talk to you soon. Thank you very much.
No problem. Thanks again, Tony. Bye-bye.